Great, let's just start talking. Go.
Good morning, good morning. And hello, Carmelita. Do we have Carmelita with us? Well, guys.
Yes, you do.
There she is. How you doing, my dear? How you doing?
I'm doing. How about yourself?
I'm still here, and I'll tell you, you're what we use for the baby boomers as an inspiration to keep active. And that's what we need, more inspirational stuff and getting people off the couch and keeping them busy, right?
Well, that's what it takes to stay young.
No,
I'm still 17 at heart.
You know, it's very true. And, you know, it's not just words, because I told you about the Larry King show they talked about. And they said, Larry, can you give us one show? And they gave him one show because it was so special. He said, people never agree on a certain subject. And he said, they had a certain statement they made, and they had six people on the panel. And he said, these six people will never agree. Two people or three people don't agree, but six. And to make it worse, three were from different religions and three were from different forms of science. And they made a statement, and all six people sat there nodding their heads. And the statement was, the way in which you think determines the outcome. And that's what I was talking about with you. You know, you keep active, and a lot of people, they retire and they sit and they think, well, now I'm 60 or 65. That means I have to shuffle along and sit and, you know, that's not the way it should be.
No, and it's not the way it has to be, and that is a meme, M-I-M, that is forced on us by our cultural belief system, and we don't have to buy into that. But it's very important, you know, I can't stress it enough, our thoughts are things, and we are what we believe. And
true.
I love the saying, what we believe we can achieve, as I believe that. But anyway, we've got a wonderful guest lined up. She's calling in from Oklahoma. Let me see if she's there. Senator Connie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Oh,
good
wonderful.
Afternoon from Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
Hello, Senator
wonderful.
Connie.
Well, I can't tell everybody enough about this lady. She has, first of all, broken ground. She's created history. She comes from Holdenville, Oklahoma, and she graduated from Frederick A. Douglass High School in Oklahoma City, and she earned her bachelor's degree in French from the University of Pennsylvania, where she also completed a coursework for a Master of Science in Education. And she has been so instrumental in making policies as a senator, which she has been serving for 33 years, believe it or not, because looking at her picture, she looks like she can't be more than 25, but and beautiful, by the way. but she's been an active senator and broke ground there in Oklahoma, which, Jim, you may be knowledgeable, is not the most friendly state towards people of color. In fact, they have a history, you know, that goes back to those people that wear those little funny pointed hoods with where they wear white. And she has managed to surpass all of that as the first American woman of African descent. And so let me just introduce her once more. This is Senator Connie Johnson, who is running for governor of Oklahoma. Applause, applause.
Here we go. Well, Connie, I'll tell you.
That is one interesting
place you live. The population's about 5,700, isn't it? In Holdenville?
In Holdenville? Somewhere. That could be right, yeah. 3.5 million in Oklahoma.
Now, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I looked a little bit here. In 1898, settlers petitioned the Indian Territory and incorporated Holdenville as a town. But, boy, I'll tell you, when all you have to do is watch movies, and you can see a lot of people are attracted to that area. They use it for filming and so on. I mean, now, kind of you live there, but a lot of people that live in an area just kind of live and take it for granted they live there. and it takes a tourist to come in some time and really research the history. Do you know a lot about, you know, where you're at and the location, some of the cool little places, caves and corners?
Sure. I was born in Holdenville. That's my mom's hometown. And it was a fort at one point, Fort Holden.
Oh.
But interestingly, you're familiar with the Tulsa race riots, or the Tulsa massacre, we prefer to recall it, the last lynching in Oklahoma took place in Holdenville right before the Tulsa race riot. And so that was a tidbit. But T. Boone Pickens, an internationally famous oil man, is also from Holdenville. There are several famous people from there, but I was born there, but I grew up for the most part in Oklahoma City, which is the capital city of Oklahoma.
Capital, yeah, yeah.
And I represented the predominantly African-American east side, if you will, which is where the capital is located, and pretty much every major recreational attraction in the state of Oklahoma is the area where from which whites took flight back in the 70s. And, of course, as you can imagine, it's the area that is being subject to gentrification now. So I live in an area that is very typical, that, you know, for whom the issues that I've worked on with regard to incarceration, over-incarceration, the war on drugs and the impact on our community, and economic decline, all of those issues are what inspired my candidacy. And as I'm running for governor, I do know that, you know, those issues are now impacting the state, and not just African American minority and poor communities. Oklahoma is on a race to the bottom in education, in health care, and all the things that make for a healthy society, in favor of funding and prioritizing the goals of special interests like oil in Oklahoma. Oil has an incestuous relationship, if you will, with Oklahoma policymakers. And we've been through several periods of boom or bust with oil in Oklahoma. And so I'm also a person who is promoting an alternative source of funds for Oklahoma that would stem from our hemp supply. We have probably the largest supply of hemp in the nation in Oklahoma. It grows four times a year here. We know that Colorado is making four times the money off of hemp that it's making off of recreational and medical marijuana. But, you know, I'm for diversifying our base, and certainly changing the laws on cannabis would mean that we would stop locking up so many nonviolent people in private prison settings, which, again, is having a drain on our economy. It would mean that children who are suffering from seizures and veterans who are dealing with PTSD and committing suicide at unbelievable rates would have some relief. If we could just get our policymakers to let go of the reefer madness era and all of the beliefs that were, you know, beat into our heads during that time that were wrong. So my platform covers diversity, not only in people, but in issues and in ways to fund a better future for Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. So much history. And so you stayed there. You decided to stay. Had you ever had an idea where, you know, a lot of people think, you know, I think I'll try and maybe go to a different state. Have you ever had that cross your mind?
You know, I lived in Philadelphia for 5 years while I was in school at the University of Pennsylvania. And it's also where the die was cast. You know, I got started early on. I started the Teen Democrat Club in Oklahoma City when I was 13. But while I was in Philadelphia, I had the privilege to work on the 18-year-old vote amendment to the Constitution. I worked on the campaign of a popular legislator there. I worked in the community because Penn was situated right in the heart of West Philadelphia. So I've had a chance to live somewhere else, and I've traveled extensively throughout my career, and I still like Oklahoma. I long for the beach. I will tell you that. But this is home. We are good people in Oklahoma. You recall the 1995 Murrow building bombing and how all the people came to the aid of everyone.
The aid, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, we take care of each other.
Oh, yeah, they
We're
stick
good
together.
People.
Senator Connie, that's reassuring to hear because, you know, I don't know if everybody else is familiar, but I am familiar with what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And there is a dark history there. As I mentioned before, I didn't want to call them by name, the people that run around in sheets with pointy hoods. They caused a major setback because there was jealousy of the individuals there who were, and I prefer to say American first because, after all, you know, I think people of African descent have earned the right to be called American. And so, anyway, they were so successful as business people, had such wonderful, prospering communities that these people became enraged and jealous and caused a massacre and burning of Tulsa, at Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm sure you're familiar with that history, but could you explain some of that to our listening audience?
Sure, and you're right. It was a matter of a black community that was very prosperous. There were millionaires back in the 20s. They owned theaters. There were doctors, lawyers. And it was pretty much a settlement of Black Creek Indians. Most African Americans in Oklahoma have Indian blood as well. And the area that they were allotted, they discovered oil on it. So they were very well-to-do in the 1919 and early parts of the 20th century. And so in collusion with the government, and many of the government officials we found out were involved in the Ku Klux Klan, and, you know, the National Guard was even brought into play to literally bomb that area behind a contrived incident that supposedly occurred between a white female elevator operator and a young black man who we now know later were actually involved in a romantic relationship, which was a no-no in Oklahoma. They subsequently left Oklahoma, moved to Chicago, and got married. But, you know, so it was a trumped-up issue, a situation that led them to bomb that area, to kill people, to burn down the homes. And even today, that area called Greenwood, Oklahoma, which, by the way, is the home of Charlie Wilson with the Gap Band, that area is going through the same process of, you know, it's been torn down, it's been built up again, it's being gentrified to the extent that, you know, things are going to be developed that the people who were the occupants will no longer be able to afford. We also know that Tulsa was the recent site and is the recent site of murders of black people by law enforcement. And then one particular case, Terrence Crutcher case, and he has an uncle who lives in L.A., the officer was found not guilty, even though he had his hands in the air. And, you know, then they killed a mentally ill black man who they had tracked for about a mile before killing him in front of a store because he was brandishing two knives, and this guy had a history of mental illness. So but many of the things that are in the backdrop of what's going on racially in Oklahoma and throughout the country are very still alive and well in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we're trying to figure out ways from a policy perspective to address that issue.
Prejudice is one of man's biggest losses because when people start finding out, you know, they look at the a different race and they get to know the person and what a great person that is. They're
uh-huh.
finding out that what a loss. And in World War II, the pilots we're finding out that, hey, the reason our bombers made it was because of the Black Squadron. There were great aces. They were great pilots.
Oh, yeah, the Red Tails.
The Red Tails, and they were great pilots. And then they started finding out, making friends, and they don't realize that, hey, this person you may be looking at because they're from Asia, they're from wherever, the African-American, the whatever race it is, you know, they might look at them because they're different, you know. But once they break that barrier, they think, wow, hey, this is a pretty nice guy. This is a pretty good group of people. But unfortunately,
they're just like us. They put their pants on one leg at a time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And the one common denominator, when my mother and I, we had a shop in the Beverly Hills area. We used to have some of the biggest high-profile celebrities that came in, people like Barbra Streisand and so forth. And she asked me where the restroom was. And at the time, my husband was working at CNN, and he was working with Bella Shaw, a beautiful redhead. And I told the story at one of the little parties that they used to give. And she said, Barbra Streisand uses the bathroom? And I said, this is one of the things that makes this a common denominator, right? But, you know, the biggest lie that people live with is that we're separate. But we're not. Mm-hmm. We all come from the same source. And we have more in common than we have different.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
And that's
so anyway,
what I speak to in my campaign is that let's talk about the things that people have in common. Everybody wants good schools for their children. Everybody
absolutely.
Wants access to affordable health care. They want housing. Good housing. They want jobs that pay them a meaningful living wage. They want communities that are safe without being over-policed and are people being shot down. Everybody wants the same thing. But so many times we get divided based on non-consequential issues like women's reproductive health rights and LGBTQ preferences, the issues about anything that they can throw up that divides and splinters people is what campaigns focus on anymore. So we want to focus on, and we're asking the people in Oklahoma, what keeps you up at night? What bothers you? What concerns you? What is it the government could do to help you
know,
better?
Senator Connie, you know, here's the thing, that the sheriff, that whoever it was that shot that person, and that kind of frustration that goes on, remember that this person isn't getting away with it. He might seem to get away with it, but guess what? Somebody's watching, and he's going to be accountable for that. Every tiny little hair on your head is going to be accountable. So that's going to be seen. And then I remember reading in the scripture, it said, for those people, like everybody, for your anguish, rejoice. The glory I have for you in heaven will be far greater. And so don't be too frustrated when you see that Bob or Joe or whoever getting away with that. They're not getting away with anything. Anybody that does something that's not right, you know, they're going to be held accountable, believe me. That's the way it is.
You know, I'm also an advocate against the death penalty in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
We wrongfully convict people. In Oklahoma, we even botch up the process. But my brother was killed. And, you know, even in that moment, even though the guy didn't get the death penalty, he was actually found not guilty, and he did it in front of 40 people. Even though he didn't get it, I never wanted it for him because it was important, along the same lines, that I be able to forgive this guy. And I have to trust God that he is the ultimate fixer of everything here on earth, if we can just hold on and believe.
That's right. That's right. And it is frustrating, though, Senator Connie, because we know
for sure.
That
it hurts. It hurts.
Very frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it will all come out, like they say. It all comes out in the wash. But still,
we
are as humans.
The people of Tulsa are hurting. They
they
feel that no one is listening. They don't feel safe. Women will not pull over now when police stop them. You know, they will go to a safe space. It's just not a good environment when a government is not protecting all of its citizens equally.
Yeah, that's true. And it's time for a major prayer attack. And
Yes, we need a prayer in a mass prayer, because you know, there is power in prayer, and especially in group prayer, and that cuts across all party lines. It cuts across all racial divides, and I think that that's what we really, really need. And I'm starting to see evidence of people coming together for a common good. Like, for example, if this healthcare bill goes through as it is now, that's going to cause at least 23 million or billion. I'm not quite sure if it's a million or a billion, but I know there's going to be a lot of people without health insurance if it goes through. And the elderly people can forget it. They might as well just jump off a cliff if something happens to them. Because what's happening now, I really think it's a tax reduction bill for the billionaires. It has nothing to do with health care.
And the impact on the people with disabilities, as we come up to celebrate the birthday of the man who brought about the American Disabilities Act, we're going to have a demonstration in Oklahoma City on Wednesday at our U.S. Senator's office to, you know, protest any vote that he would make to take healthcare services away from this vulnerable group, and in particularly these people who have disabilities, the elderly, the children, the most vulnerable people in our society are going to be set back by what's proposed under this Senate healthcare bill. So prayer is in order.
Yes, absolutely.
And Carmelita knows that from, you know, the shows we've done, you know, Reese and I talk about finances and that. We all know that one of the problems with the seniors, and they say the average baby boomer made $44,000 a year, and they're supposed to retire with 11 times that amount in the bank, which is $500,000. Well, the fact is the average baby boomer retires with $25,000 to $30,000 in the bank, and we know that lasts a long time. You know, now that you've got more time on your hands. Oh, geez. And what's happening is they're starting to lose their homes because of deductibles. And the deductibles are adding up to be a lot, and they can't afford both. And I saw my neighbor who has lived there for 40, 50 years. I couldn't believe it when they were moving. And because these two went to work like clockwork for 40 years. And I said, John, what's going on? He said they had to short sale the house because his wife has been sick for the last 20 years. And they had to borrow, you know, for the deductibles and things. Wow, I didn't, you know.
Wow.
And that's just one person. So.
And that's health care.
And see, this is a thing a lot of people don't realize, that people who are especially on fixed incomes, that if the deductible goes beyond their ability to live and they have to make that choice of whether they have a roof over their head or health care, then it really puts them in a tight squeeze, and it's really so preventable. All we need to do is maintain the system that we have. It's been working. There are people who owe their lives that testify all the time that if it wasn't for Obamacare, they would be dead. And a lot of people don't acknowledge that. But I do agree that the amount of the deductibles is still very high. That's why we cannot afford for these super wealthy people to jump off the train so they can put more money in their pocket while everybody else suffers. So they need to stay in place and do their part in making a contribution, not just being so selfish and greedy that they take away that support system that we have had all this time. There's no reason why Medicare or Medicaid should disappear. There's no reason other than these people want to just continue to line their pockets, and that's the only thing that they're interested in, and that's the bottom line. What I would suggest with Obamacare is make it so that the deductibles are more affordable. It's supposed to be affordable health care, not death care, which is what we will have if this current so-called health care bill goes through.
Well, and we know the ACA was not perfect. No piece of legislation is.
No.
Supposing to throw it out. And start all over when so many people have been helped by it is asinine, in my opinion.
It's ludicrous.
Yes, and so we need to take what we have and work to make it better and ultimately move towards a single-payer form of health care coverage. Let's just not throw the baby out with the bathwater because a black man put it in place. I mean, seriously.
Black man at that, they forget that he had a mother.
Exactly.
You know, I have to, on that note, I just have to say something funny. I saw something online where the man said, I could never vote for a black man to be president. So somebody said back to him, well, then vote for the half part of the half white part of him.
Yeah.
It's so silly, you know. Yeah. It's so silly.
Well, and he invested a lot in health care.
Yes, and he was the first one to get it through.
Exactly.
Hillary and all the rest of them tried, and they weren't successful, but he was.
It's not perfect. He had to make some compromises to get it done, but it is something that is working for millions of people, saving lives, and for some the costs are kind of crazy, but that's where we need to work. I think what people also don't realize is that in their attempts to try to thwart Obamacare, the present administration has been, and the Congress has been holding up payments to these insurance companies that was to offset them working with the program. So you're going to start hearing it from a lot of people, not just the citizens, about what's going on with the shenanigans in Washington to try to shut down Obamacare.
They're only trying to shut it down because it has his name on it. You know, one of the comedic episodes on a Jimmy Kimmel show was showing a people in the street being interviewed, and they asked people, which do you prefer, the Affordable Health Care Act or Obamacare? And they said the Affordable Health Care Act, not knowing that it's one and the same. So it's people need to be educated. There's a lot of ignorance going on in this country.
You know, that's true, and I know Senator Connie knows this. You know, here's the thing. People go to vote for someone, no matter who it is. It's you remember, well, I don't know, if Kennedy when he ran against Nixon. Now, what was the big deal afterwards? Unbelievable. It was that Nixon didn't wear makeup. That was the big news. There was nothing else about what their beliefs were in this. They were all talking about, well, Nixon didn't wear his makeup, you know, so he looked pale. But, you know, here's the thing. People watch TV and they see a commercial and they, or they see a movie star talk about, yeah, I like this guy or that guy. Like you said, Carmelie, you got to do your research, you know. You got to find out what the person was
all
about.
Yes, do your due diligence. Do your own, research, yes.
You got to do, yeah. I mean, you can't just vote because Bob Hope or whoever back then, you know, said, yeah, I support this guy. A lot of them didn't. You know, they didn't the smart ones didn't pick one or the other. But so what's on the table now, Senator Connie? What do you have? What are the plans for the future?
Well, she's running for governor.
Well, yeah.
The election is in June. The primary is June 2018. So we're traveling the state now, raising awareness as well as raising funds. I think it's a non-traditional campaign in that there are a lot of rich, older white gentlemen in the race. I think there are like six Republicans that are going to run. And, you know, I'm different. I have spent over 35 years in the policy arena. I was a staff person for 24 years prior to becoming a senator. And I was a senator for 9 years. I made history as the first African-American and the first woman to achieve a major party U.S. Senate nomination in 2014, at which point I left the state Senate and became vice chair of the Democratic Party and continued to work to try to get people out to vote. We had the lowest voter turnout in the nation in 2014 in Oklahoma when only 29% of the people voted. And I just didn't believe that that was a true representation. Our citizens, as good as we are intentionally left uninformed or misinformed by the media, by the policymakers. A lot of people are dealing with just trying to survive to the extent that they don't believe the power of their vote. So we are working with voting strategies, reaching out to the various communities. Oklahoma is a large rural area. We have two major urban areas, Oklahoma City and Tulsa, but, you know, getting the word out and the messaging out to the rural area is the challenge. But just as sure as I go to Hobart, and we have a Miami, what we call Miami, and Idabel and Guymon, these are the four corners of the state, right? They're listening, they're thirsty for the truth, someone who will be truthful with them about what government has done. They have robbed the people. It's a rigged system, and it's not on behalf of the people. It's on behalf of the special interests, and corporate welfare abounds versus the welfare of the people. And that's the message that we're taking to people, to say, you have the power. You can vote. You can change things. We have a high felony population in Oklahoma, and people can vote again after their sentence expires, but many of them have been told they can never vote again. So we're undoing misinformation around voting, and we're asking people to sign up to vote by mail as a strategy and get 3 weeks to vote instead of 3 days to vote in Oklahoma. So we're using everything at our disposal to get the word out, to help people understand that government doesn't work when you're not involved. And like my friend Jesse Jackson says, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
That's exactly right. And Senator Connie, would you please explain how voter suppression has been working across the country?
Yes, it's very strange. You know, given the Voting Rights Act and the move by the Congress, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago, to eliminate Section 4 and 5 and all of the moves since then that have been taken to limit who can vote, and even this present administration's claim of a voter fraud to the point of creating an election commission, all of these are made up. Made up intentions about what's happening in voting, and none of it is true. In Oklahoma, we have you don't have to show a picture ID to vote. Your voter registration card is the only ID you need. But we do have a process whereby they purge the rolls. Even though someone may have voted and they miss it, they purge the rolls, and then a person goes to vote and they find out they're not registered. But I know there are worse schemes in other states. I thought it was very interesting, just in voting in general, how Coretta Scott King came back from the grave and her letter about Jeff Sessions locking up black people for voting by mail and not locking up white people during the course of his hearings to be the U.S. Attorney General. I thought that just said it all, because that was happening. That has been happening forever. Her words came back from the grave to haunt this man, because what he had done was wrong and he got away with it. And now we know we have an Attorney General who has a history of being okay with voter suppression.
Not only is he okay with voter suppression, he's a fan of David Duke, one of the top people in the Ku Klux Klan. He said the only thing that he doesn't have to deal with is the baggage. So he admires somebody like that. And this is what we have running the country right now. He's only one example. So we really, really need to pray hard, that's for sure, to get there. You talk about the swamp getting bigger. And not smaller. So we have to drain the swamp, and it starts with these people with the big money, the Robert Mercers, the Charles and David Koch brothers. They have over $200 billion. They could afford to buy some countries. They have more money than some countries do, but yet they don't have enough. This is where the greed comes in, and they are actually the ones that are pulling the strings, running the show, and that are undercover. We need to expose these people, put them out there in the forefront where people can see what they are doing. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Jim, are you there?
Jimmy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I maybe I dropped a big bomb. Everybody,
everybody wants
not real fast.
See, Carmelita, it's one of those silent zones that they say stay away from those, and we're all waiting for each other.
Oh,
to
is
talk.
That what it is?
But,
well,
you know, the bottom line is, Carmelita and I have talked about this, and I give her so much credit, because I see, you know, when I go to one of these events, she's not only there, and I meet so many people through her. She's up on stage and she's speaking, and then all of a sudden
she's singing, and I'm going like, wow. Carmelita is the example that we use of for the baby boomers, that you don't have to, you know, retire and be stagnant and sit in the chair.
You don't
and
have
you're
to
like
sit down
too.
In a rocking chair.
No. And that's why I asked you what's on your
I'm
plate.
I'm a baby
so,
boomer.
You're
I'm
a baby,
baby
boomer.
Boomer,
okay.
And I would submit that life only begins now. I think
there
the
you
years
go.
Of
there
experience,
you go.
We did every Christmas, Mother's Day, and Easter. We didn't skip a thing. And the lessons and experiences we got along the way are what we're wanting to still use to help those who are coming along today. So I think 65 is the new 40, if you will.
It's
the new beginning. Yeah.
It's a new beginning, literally.
We're just getting started, but we have all this knowledge behind us. Why let that go to waste? So we can go into, you know, entrepreneurship, new business, plus turn around and help these people and give them advice if they listen. And there's so much. And like you said, it's the new 40 or whatever. And when you see these stories about the lady 95 that's up on the parallel bars or the guy that's skydiving.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to slow down. Like we used to say, you know, you're a baby boomer when it takes you two tries to get up off the couch. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way.
And you make it on the third one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I asked you, what's on your plate?
It's definitely about mentoring and respecting the millennials and the generations to come, because we are dealing with some of the brightest kids in our history. I've got a 26 and a 28-year-old. Yeah, I had them late in life for a purpose. But these are the brightest, this is the brightest generation of kids that I have ever seen. And they want to participate, but they're not going to take a bunch of mess off of anybody. They call it like they see it. I don't think there is a concern with color as our generation. So we have an opportunity to mentor them, to give them guidance and share with, they will be in charge in the next 20 years. And it behooves us to share with them everything good that we can while we can, in order that they can go ahead and become, you know, take America to the next level, whatever it is we're supposed to become. And that's what excites me the most, is I have a lot of support among millennials in Oklahoma, and mainly because I will talk about high student loan debt and an inability to get a fair shake at a post-high school education, and the fact that they can't afford housing because they can't find the jobs that correlate to their majors. And, you know, and the fact that a lot of them are being arrested for nonviolent possession of marijuana in Oklahoma and having their futures ruined and their children's futures affected. So, you know, I'm speaking to the issues that impact them as a group, that impact elderly, that impact our children, that impact groups for developmentally disabled, people with disabilities, people who are gender different. That's our plan, is to speak to the people of Oklahoma, all of the people of Oklahoma, and getting them to recognize that they must engage at this time. The one thing I'll give Mr. 45 credit for is that he awakened the souls of America, and people are now understanding that when they were silent, somebody was busy. And I want to keep raising awareness and giving them strategies to do that, helping them understand the power of advocating, the power of protesting, the power of boycotting, if you will, whatever is necessary to participate civically. It's what we need our people understanding that they must be engaged in at this point. And people are ready for that message. I spoke yesterday to a group in Shawnee called Shawnee Uprising about the three main themes of civic engagement, and that's volunteering and being active and participating in fundraisers for charity, but registering voters, working on campaigns, contributing to campaigns. But I think the biggest piece that people are now feeling a need to do is to speak up at these government meetings and to talk to their elected officials and write op-eds to the paper and talk about issues that keep them up at night. And, man, the protests and the boycott, economic boycotts really work when everything else fails. That's how you get people's attention.
Money talks.
Money talks.
This is the one thing that this country understands. And unfortunately, that's another thing that needs to be repaired too, because you can buy, and please, I believe this is a quote that I got from one of the experts, that a congressperson can be purchased for $10,000. I mean, that's
wow.
just an example of the way it's been working, and it's really obscene the amounts of money that go into the elections now. You know, it's just really obscene.
Oh, I can't believe it, yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's
ago.
Only, again, so that the 1% can keep everything under their thumb. You know, they want to make this a plutocracy, not a democracy. They want to
uh-huh.
make it authoritarian way of governing, and unless it's stopped in its tracks, it's not going to get better. We have to come together and do something to stop it.
You know, when you hear the figures financially, like Senator Kennedy, if you remember back, and Carmelita, the price of homes and our parents' homes, and you think, well, you know, I think it was $18,000 my father was going to pay, and this is back in the early 40s.
I can remember even less than that, $13,000, which
that.
Is not enough now to buy a car.
And they're saying, oh, that's too much money. And could you believe back in our days in the 50s and 60s, you know, we knew what homes ran for then, but could you have thought that homes would be in the hundreds of thousands? We would have never believed it, you know?
No, and just an average home, you know, even now,
yeah.
it's over $1 million, you know. And right now, my husband and I, we look at each other, and we wouldn't be able to afford our own home now if we were to be on the buyer's market. It's ridiculous.
How is that?
And
I'm
concerned about the youngsters coming along. What are they going to do?
How do they buy a home and afford these? Yeah, I don't know. Of course, then again, they say, okay, the policeman made $6,000 a year, and now he's making $75,000 plus a year. I don't know if it keeps up, you know, according to these prices.
The expenses are running ahead of the income. I mean, that's the reality that most people face. Of course, the billionaires who don't need the extra money. It's like Robin Hood in reverse is what is going on right now with the Congress and the Senate with this new health care so-called bill. I mean, Robin Hood in reverse.
Yeah.
So anyway,
just one more quick one. Out here in California, Carmelita knows, we took a big hit. You know, we dropped a lot, you know, 200,000-400,000. Now, but we have had a comeback. Has Oklahoma kind of had its comeback? Did it get hit in 08, and has it, you know, had a comeback with the real estate?
I think it's in progress. We just like everyone else, were hit hard by the mortgage crisis. And I think you still have a lot of people who are holding on by the skin of their teeth with, you know, they still enduring some high interest rates. And, you know, at the same time, which led them into situations where their credit became shot. And so they're having difficult times refinancing.
I just want to interject now, because we're getting our cue that it's time for us to get on our horse and ride off into the sunset. But before we do that, I want to share with everyone that you can reach Senator Connie Johnson by her website. Visit her website at connieforgovernor.com. That's connieforgovernor.com. And we want to thank you again for coming on as our guest, and we look forward to having you come back again.
Or you can text Connie to 63566.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Connie.
Thank you for listening to Radio Boomers Live with your host, Aretha Gray, star Betty White's Off Their Rockers, and EZ's dad, Jim Zulli. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Radio Boomers Live. Radio Boomers Live is brought to you by the Easy Way Broadcasting Network. That's the letter E, the letter Z, Broadcasting Network.